All right. Well, thank you for coming. This is Renewing Our Perspective on Physical Activity. And my name is Elena Ross. And I'm in the Village just for a week and a half. And normally I'm down in Castle Rock, Washington, which is where I teach full-time nutrition and health and fitness classes at Lower Columbia College. And I left my husband and four kids. So I'm up here just getting to relax and do what I enjoy, which is teaching. So I'll go ahead and get started. I know that picture's hard to see, but I had my dad dig up some old photos of Holden Village, and that's myself and my sister here in 1983. And I'm the one on the right, my older sister, and we're on the 10 Mile Falls hiking trail. And that picture really speaks to what I'm talking about today, which is being active, but also being active in the outdoors. And I think if you're here at Holden, you probably love both those things. So hopefully what I'm talking about today will relate a lot to each of you, even though I know we're inside right now and it's a gorgeous day outside. So first of all, our bodies are made to move. Has anyone in here taken anatomy and physiology or, you know, chemistry, biology, those classes? Almost all of you. So you know when you've studied that, and when I went through school, I had to take kinesiology and anatomy and all those things, how amazing the human body is. So the musculoskeletal system, the way our bones and our joints are put together and the different fluids in our joints and how each ligament attaches in a specific spot just to make the right movement and everywhere. It's just our bodies are meant to be moving machines and the way the muscles function. And then when you tie in the cardiovascular system with the heart and the lungs and how we're pumping, we're getting the oxygen to our muscles when we need to move. And when we move more, we're breathing harder and we're getting more oxygen. And just how all that functions together is really amazing, and how our bodies are just meant to be moving. But in today's society, we do a lot of sitting because our minds have advanced so far. We've created things like cars and machines that we don't need to move as much as we used to. How many of you have seen a little kid when they're just learning to walk or just learning to run and discovering they can jump and how exciting that is for them? And they have this joy on their face that they get to move. And I remember my kids when they were younger, that was just such a fun thing to watch them run outside because look at what I can do. Look how fast I can run. Look how, you know, how far I can throw. And so God has created us with these amazing human bodies that that are meant to move. So if we look at or think about our ancestors, they actually walked or ran 12 to 18 miles per day, which is, and that's the men and the women, which is really amazing. So typically the women were out gathering, the men were out hunting, but they did a lot of walking and running every single day. And I know a lot of us are working on 10,000 steps, right? Which is the equivalent of 5 miles per day. But most Americans get less than half that, so less than 2.5 miles a day. But our bodies can do a lot more. So back then, our ancestors burned about 1,000 calories every day just in their physical activity that they did. What today we burn about 300, but most of us are even less if we have a desk job and we're sitting most of the time. So they also not only were like walking and running, but they had to carry and lift heavy things if they were hunting or gathering different things. But they also had to be pretty smart. They had to strategize. So we've used our brains throughout history as well, but it's using that our brain with our body at the same time. There's that mind-body connection. And if you look at humans, we can live in almost any climate. We've adapted to live in very hot places and very cold places, and our body and our mind can do that as well. So that connection is something I want you to keep in mind as I continue with this, because we still have that connection today, but we're very disconnected with our mind and our body from where we used to be. So how many of you have stress in your life? I know, I certainly have a lot of it, but people have always had stress. It's not a new thing. If we look back through history, humans had maybe things that we didn't have to worry about, like the child and infant mortality rates. They didn't know for sure when they were going to have food or if they were going to have food. Shelter, fear of wild animals, other groups of people coming into their territory. When they got sick, there wasn't necessarily a cure like we have today. They didn't have vaccinations. They didn't have medications to stop the pain. So there was always, people have always had stress. But the question is really, how do we deal with that stress? And we look at today, we have lots of depression. We have lots of mood disorders. We have PTSD. Why are they so high when throughout history we have always had stress in our lives? So there's a question here. Has our ability to cope with the stress changed? And we're going to come back to that, so keep that in mind. Okay. Anyone a runner in here like to run? No runners? Okay.
All our friends are out running right now.
Are they? Okay.
The skinny ones.
All right. You'll have to tell them this. But it's pretty interesting that if we look at our anatomy, we're actually built to run. And I'm not saying everyone needs to go out and become runners or anything like that, but it's pretty amazing that the way our foot arch is shaped, if you think of a bridge in the shape of an arch, it's a very strong formation. It's the same thing in your foot. Our toes are short and fat, so we can move quicker on our feet. There's actually a ligament in the back of our neck that keeps our head steady when we're running so it doesn't jiggle around. The only reason we need our gluteus maximus muscle is for running, which is our butt muscle. So we wouldn't need it if we were only walkers. So they've actually identified 26 different running markers on the human body, and there's evidence that people used to actually chase down animals as a form of hunting and endurance running. So not sprinting after, but chasing them down until the animal became completely exhausted and collapsed. And that was a method of hunting the animal, which is pretty fascinating because that's a long endurance run. And it was a social experience for people. So like I said, I'm not saying everyone should go out and become runners, because now we have so many different activities we can do instead of running if we don't enjoy running. There's rock climbing and there's cross-country skiing and snowshoeing and so many different things. But the idea is our bodies are meant to be moving. Okay. So why is running so popular? And can everyone do it? We can. And what's pretty interesting about running compared with other sports like football or things like that is the running ability actually peaks at age 27, which is a little bit later than you might think. But it declines very, very slowly after that, so that if you keep yourself in shape, someone who's the age 65 can run just as well as someone the age 19. Isn't that pretty interesting? So it's something that people can maintain throughout life, whereas other activities might be a little bit more difficult. So, and then the question is, why do people do these 5Ks, 10Ks, half marathons? A lot of people are drawn to running. Okay, so there's also evidence that our bodies really like to be outside. So humans have spent 99.9% of our existence outside. It's really been just the last few hundred years that we've spent so much time indoors. So our physiology, our rhythms are really adapted to the outdoor world, the sounds that we like to hear, the creaks, the birds, things like that. That's why it's so calming for us. And our body rhythms, along with the sun rising and the sun setting, all those things are very natural for us. So when we're outside, we have to engage all five of our senses, which we're going to talk about in just a second. We get to use the default system in our brain, and we're in this calm but alert state. So what types of things do you smell when you're outside? Anybody?
Evergreen trees.
Evergreen trees. Yeah.
Flowers,
grass.
The grass,
rain.
The rain,
autumn leaves,
mm-hmm.
Pine needles, salt water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're at the beach.
Raspberries.
Yes. There's all sorts of smells that when we go outside we can experience. What about things that we see?
Mountains.
Landscapes. Yeah.
Water. Mm-hmm. Bright snow.
Yeah.
Waterfalls.
Yes.
Shadows.
Yeah, shadows. So many different
sunlight.
Things. The sun. Yeah.
Stars.
Mm-hmm.
Snow and rain.
Yeah.
And
actually, the patterns that we see outdoors engage our brain in a different way than patterns that we see that are human-made. And they engage our brain in a way that helps to relax our brain. And our brain is more at ease when we picture, when we see things outdoors, than when we see things that are man-made. Yeah?
So do they know if it's a different part of the brain?
I didn't read that if it was a different part of the brain. Okay. But I know it's just a... Yeah. What do we hear outdoors?
Wind.
Yeah.
Cars. Water running.
Water running. What'd you say, cars?
Cars.
I know. I live on a highway, so I understand that.
Insects chirping, buzzing.
Yes, insects.
Birds,
squirrels.
Squirrels.
Yeah.
Leaves rustling.
Mm-hmm. Oh, how unique. Yeah.
That was the first time I heard one. It's pretty amazing.
Yes. Yeah. And hearing is our most sensitive sense as well, because that's our first alert to any type of danger. All right. And then touch. It's fun to watch kids, young kids outside, touching the grass and the leaves and get to experience the different textures. Anything else come to mind about that one?
Sand.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Blackberry bushes, they have lots of
fun. Yeah.
Just touching the leaves on different shrubs and the texture.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have to share a little anecdote. I'm with a granddaughter on the East Coast. They live near New York City, and they had a 9-month-old. She's now 5. But the first time we went to the Central Park with her, I took her out of the stroller, and I said, let's just put her in the grass. And her parents said, we've never put her in the grass. Because she, you know, she's 9 months old. And so she sat down in the grass, and it was such an amazing experience.
Yeah.
It was just touch, and put it on her tongue, and she was just a big thing.
Got to really experience it. We're actually going to talk about kids and not experiencing nature, too.
Yeah.
So, and then of course we have taste, right? I mean, this is where the raspberries, we can taste nuts
grass.
And grass. There you go.
Grass, right?
Blackberries.
Huckleberries.
Hopefully not the, you know, poisonous plants, but the ones that are good nutrition for us. So, would you say clover?
Clover.
Okay.
Salt water.
Yes. Yeah. So all 5 senses are fully engaged when we're outdoors. It's pretty unique. What does nature do to the brain? So we have 3 systems in our brain. The executive network is the one we use most of the time when we are task-oriented. To me, this is, I picture myself throughout my day. When I'm at work, I'm using this one. When I'm at home managing my family, I'm using this one. I think a lot of us might be in the same boat with that. We use this executive network a lot. The spatial system orients us. And then we have the default system, which is the creative system in our brain. It's more empathetic. The default and the executive can't run at the same time, which is kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. So a lot of us, you know, if we're busy and stressed, we're going to be in that executive network. But when we go out into nature, the default network becomes a lot stronger. And it also turns on. It's like it's a chance for our executive network in our brain to rest while that default network kind of takes over. And that's why you might feel more relaxed when you're out in nature. And did some of you get out this morning on a hike or walk, and maybe you sensed that, oh, it's so beautiful and I feel good? You're probably in that default network. So also the default network engages positive thoughts. So if you were mulling over something, maybe indoors, and weren't, you know, thinking about a decision or thinking about something that's not going well in your life, if you actually take a walk outdoors, that tends to bring that into a more positive light. They've done some studies on that, which is pretty interesting. A lot of people will claim to have great ideas when they're outside, when they're on a hike, or they have a revelation about a decision they need to make in their life. And if you look at the Bible and look at Jesus, how many times does it say Jesus went away to pray? He went into the wilderness or the desert or the nature. He always went away somewhere to pray. So I can relate to that, getting away to...
You say intellectual and creative can't work together.
Executive and the default. So yeah, the task-driven part of the brain can't work at the same time as the default, the creative side. One has to take over. One has to be in charge.
So you're saying, why can you get good ideas then? Or
yeah, artists.
Right, they're working in their creative.
Very intelligent.
No, I'm not. They would be intelligent, but they're working in that default network when they're creating art.
Saying one's in charge makes more sense to me.
Right, you have both. All right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so your executive network gets a chance to rest when you're out in nature. Okay, how else can nature affect us? You have higher alpha wave activity in the brain when we're in nature, which is related to increased serotonin, which helps to relax us as well. This one was pretty interesting. After a stressful event, and they've done studies on this, if you go out into nature, like on a walk, your body will return to a normal state very quickly. So within 5 minutes, your heart rate will decrease. Sweat glands go back to normal, blood pressure goes back to normal within 5 minutes after a very stressful event. And they had the same stressful event for people who watched a video of nature and also for those who did nothing, and they never fully recovered from the stressful event. So their heart rates remained elevated, blood pressure remained high, but those people who got outdoors and they were moving, that brought everything back to a normal level. So it helps us to recover from things. So they did a study on, these were Japanese businessmen, where they had them hike for an hour in the morning for 3 mornings, and after 3 days, their natural killer T cells, which help fight off disease, increased by 40% just after 3 days in nature, which is pretty amazing, and that boost lasted for 7 days. So think of yourselves coming out here and being active, what you guys are doing for your bodies and your immune system. Getting in the dirt. How many of you like to garden? Okay, awesome. So when you get your hands in the dirt, if you're exposed to common soil bacteria, that may reduce your anxiety and increase serotonin. So at least in mice it did. So... Okay, this is pretty interesting, too. You guys like the smell of evergreen trees? I know I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, so I love that. Just smelling evergreens can increase anti-cancer proteins in your body, just smelling them. Also, smelling them drops your blood pressure, and they're not sure if it's because we're so relaxed when we smell evergreens. And it increases BDNF, which is brain-derived neurotrophic factor, and that's what helps you with your memory in your brain. So just being out among evergreen trees. Okay, so like we mentioned, your brain rests in nature. You're in this calm, alert zone. You have to be alert to your surroundings just in case there's some danger, right? When you're out on a hike, you're always kind of listening if there's a rustling in the bushes, or you hear a crack of something stepping on a stick in case there's an animal or something out there. But it's calm. It's a calm alert phase. So the other thing that's pretty interesting is when you're walking or running, you're moving at a human speed, so you're able to take everything in. But when we're driving in a car or we're moving faster than that, we can't take in our surroundings as fully as we can when we are moving at human speed. And there's another thing called soft fascination, which is when we see something really beautiful out in nature and we're like, oh, wow, look at that. And it's pretty fun being here because even just this morning after yoga, we walked out and the sun was hitting some of the peaks and the ladies in front of us had stopped and they were taking pictures. Oh, look at the, you know, look at the sun on the peaks and a sunset, a waterfall. When we stop and see things like that, even in our busy lives, I know when I'm driving home from work, oh, look at the sunset. It's really pretty today, or there's a rainbow. Can you guys think of any other soft fascination things that you see?
Clouds.
The clouds, yeah, they can make really beautiful patterns sometimes. Yeah.
The moon.
Yes.
And also it's temporary. I mean, like, if you look at the sunrise, I mostly up early, then the light changes, and as you watch it, it's consistently moving.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. And it's never exactly the same, sunset or sunrise.
You can't quite capture it any other way than looking at it.
Yeah, yeah. Good, good point.
Backpacking at night, you're away from all city lights, stars, you can see them better any place.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the stars just the other night were really beautiful out here, too. So, yeah, okay. Okay, just walking outside decreases your cortisol levels, which is your stress hormone. You have a decrease in sympathetic nerve activity, decrease in blood pressure, and decrease in heart rate. So just going on a simple walk outdoors, it has to be away from an urban setting when they've done these studies. It needs to be, you know, it can be like a tree-lined street or a park or something like that, but it needs to be something outdoors. And then we have the awe factor. They've actually decided now that awe is an emotion. It's a power emotion. It's something that blows your mind, okay? So it's deeply powerful. It's a life-altering jolt. So in just a second, I'll have you share with your neighbor if you've experienced this, but it would be something like, I don't know if any of you went and saw the eclipse last summer in a place where you could see the whole thing, swimming with dolphins, the northern lights. This photo was taken, my husband and oldest son and I climbed Mount St. Helens last summer, and that's taken from the top. And that was definitely getting to the top where you can see Rainier one way, Adams one way, Mount Hood the other way, and you're just standing on top was pretty amazing. So share with a neighbor if you've had an awe experience before. So go ahead. Is there anything you'd like to share with the whole group? Anyone have a good one? Crater Lake is pretty amazing. Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah.
The Grand Canyon.
Grand Canyon. Yeah. Good. Anybody else? That's good. You guys must have had a lot of awe experiences. That's awesome. I know. Just seeing what? Yeah, just the simple things too. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a good point. Yeah. It was really pretty. Okay. I know when I teach my like 19 and 20 year olds, I have no problem cutting them off, but you guys are...
We've had more years to experience.
I know, which is good. Did any of the groups back there want to share?
They're still sharing.
They're still sharing, okay. So the cool thing with awe is it's associated with a positive emotions. We see something, we're like, wow, and we feel good on the inside when we see it, right? We actually feel a change in our mood, our behavior, and our attitude just by seeing something or experiencing something really powerful.
I have a question.
Yes.
We were at Mount St. Helens about a year after. And so it was all tree-lined, and then we come over a ridge, and the whole thing was laid flat. All the trees were laid flat. And to me, that was awe. That was the power of the mountain.
Right, right.
Blew down.
Yes.
And there already were some animals, and then a few years later we came back and it was regrowing.
Yeah.
I remember gasping.
Yes.
Coming over that bridge, you're like,
yeah. It changed so much, right?
The mountain,
right? Yes. It's pretty amazing. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's... Before we recreated.
And it's coming back now, the growth and everything, which is pretty neat. Some people are saying, is this the inverse PTSD? To go out and have these awe experiences. Some people will seek experiences like this, right? To go out, climb a mountain, or whatever that might be. We can also have negative awe experiences. When I was in here yesterday and they were talking about the fire coming through, that would be one of those, you know, fire or natural disaster. But the thing about a negative awe experience is it brings people closer together. And I saw evidence of that in the presentation that they showed yesterday as well. People are more likely to reach out and to connect with each other after they've had a negative awe experience. Okay. So, exercise. They've done lots of studies. Is it better to exercise indoor or outdoors? Well, both is beneficial. If you can move, that would be great. But on some of these studies, this first one, with the 40 healthy men and women, they took them mountain hiking on a strenuous trail, and they did the exact same workout on a treadmill indoors. So the same amount of hills, the same distance and everything. They found that the mountain hike was harder, even though it was supposed to be the same, the heart rate increased more, but it felt less strenuous than that indoor workout on the treadmill. And the mood after the mountain hike was a lot higher than the people using the treadmill. To me, this makes sense. So they did a study, women with breast cancer. They did the exact same workout indoors and outdoors with the groups. The outdoor group had more positive mood. They felt better, and they were more likely to stick with the training than the group that was indoor, even though it was the exact same workout that they were doing. Women who went outside in the forest for 2 weeks that had breast cancer increased their killer T cells. And then the last study on there is people who exercised in nature had basically higher fitness levels and were more likely to stick with it. So these are some different studies on that. What about our kids? So the single best thing for kids' development is right here, unstructured outdoor playtime. That is number one for the physical body and for the brain development. I mean, you'd think it would be maybe, you know, they work with this or that indoors, but no, it's just throw them outside and don't tell them what to do. Let them figure it out on their own. And I know my childhood was like that. We were outdoors all the time, but now things have changed, and we have very structured schedules for our kids, and we're getting away from that. When they're outdoors, they're using all their senses, just like we talked about. They're learning spatial awareness. We already talked about how it improves not only their brain, but their emotional development as well. The brains are just ready to feed on that outdoor experience, ready to learn and grow from that. But in today's society, and this relates to kind of what you mentioned, our kids are in car seats, and then we move them straight to a high chair when we bring them inside, or straight to a little play thing. We put them in strollers, and they're not getting that opportunity to really explore their environment and physically move as much maybe as they used to. We're seeing higher rates of ADHD, childhood obesity has tripled in the last 30 years. We see more allergies and asthma, which we know that kids who grow up outdoors, like on farms, their incidence of allergies and asthma decreases when they're spending more time in germs, which is interesting. And we're seeing more vitamin D deficiencies. They're not getting the sunshine, out in the sunshine like they used to. And then we're packing their schedules, and we're planning it for them. So they go to school, then they come home, and then we stick them to soccer practice, and then they go to piano lessons, and then they come home and do homework, and they're not getting unstructured outdoor playtime that they need for their development. And then, of course, there's video games at home that is maybe more enticing than going outside. Yeah.
What is research saying about the prevalence of ADHD?
there are some links to foods. There are some links to that actual outdoor playtime, not getting that, and links to screen time with the ADHD. So there's, but the research is not completely conclusive, so that's why it's a little bit tricky. But they do know that giving them more time to exercise helps with the ADHD. So, yeah.
Is there any correlation between autism on the autism spectrum disorder at all with what you just said?
I haven't studied that, gone into that too much, yeah. Yeah.
I was going to say, growing up in California in the 50s and early 60s, we were required to have 3 recesses a day.
That's awesome.
We had a morning, lunch, yep, and afternoon and recess, and then yeah, we had, you were required to have PE every day, yeah, 8 through 12.
And yeah,
it's really gone away. For some kids,
I know,
aren't even getting a long recess at all.
I know, and they're cutting recesses to get more academic time. Yeah. You're actually a slide ahead of me. I'm going to talk about that too.
Okay.
Yeah, but yeah,
academics are going down.
I know. You're completely right. So I know you can't see that picture well, but that was last summer. We brought our kids. We went camping at Lake Wenatchee, and there was this big log just along the lakeshore, and my kids were just like playing in it for 2 hours. I mean, it was crazy. They were completely entertained just to play with a log. So, okay, so yeah, we're going to get into this whole kids at school thing. In Finland, they let their kids outside 15 minutes out of every hour, and Finland's test scores are way up here compared to ours. To me, that says something about maybe what we should be doing with our kids, because like we just mentioned, they're not getting the time outdoors, and they're not getting their freedom to play and move their bodies as much as they used to. So like we said, less recess, they want more academic time, we're cutting back on that minutes of PE that they're getting. And like I mentioned, those video games when they get home can be more enticing than going outside.
Are you going to talk about that quote?
Oh. No, I wasn't, but we can. So, time in the forest is not more interesting than video games, just like fruit is not more delicious than junk foods. That was a quote from one of the books I was reading out of. What do you think?
Oh, well,
I don't like it.
I just wanted to hear more, yeah.
Okay.
It's not true.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that they said this, but to me, I mean, going out in the forest is a lot.
Maybe
yeah,
a little more addictive. Like
yes,
video games and junk
yeah,
food are more addictive than fruit and the forest. But that doesn't
yeah,
mean they're more interesting.
Exactly. And I think it'd be interesting to, if you gave a kid a choice, here's some fruit, here's some junk food, which kid, some kids would choose the fruit, but a lot of kids would choose the junk food. Same thing if you said, you can go out and play, or you can play your video game. What are most kids going to do? So... Yes.
You know, the video game, oh, I just pop on the TV and I'm just tie my shoe and put on, you know, get my clothes dirty.
The laziness.
Yeah, the laziness, convenience.
Absolutely. So, what does being physically active do to our brains? It's pretty amazing. The correlation between exercising and improving our brain power. So, and I won't read all of these to you guys, but basically it'll increase the kids' their IQ, their verbal ability, mathematics scores go up, academic readiness goes up, and exercising right before school. So they did a study on this. They had a PE class the first, you know, first period of the day, and students had math right after it. And those students, their scores improved significantly compared to the students who just had their math class in the middle of the day. So getting that blood flowing into the brain can really help academic performance.
And I'm really shocked being in physical therapy how weak our children are.
Okay, physically?
Incredibly
yeah,
physically weak from all of that. We just talked about sitting, playing games, watching too much TV.
Yeah.
Not getting outside. They don't use their muscles.
Yeah. Exactly.
We have so many injuries because these kids are so weak.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And if you did physical fitness testing, I know a lot of kids can't do a push-up anymore.
You can't even do a sideline leg lift, or they're shaking after like two leg lifts.
Yeah.
It's like incredible.
Yeah, so physically, yeah, they're not getting the time put in and building that muscle mass that they used to.
What's your thought on structured activity versus unstructured? Because I feel like there's another phenomenon. Yeah. There's also a whole segment of our population that's way over-scheduled and doing, yeah, you know, all of these activities and a million different things versus kind of what I hear you talking about, more, you know, time in the forest,
yeah,
outside, unstructured, and kind of the benefit on your brain.
Yeah.
Besides just the benefit of being physically active.
Yeah, well, you know, my kids do, you know, they play soccer on structured teams and basketball and things like that, but we try not to make it so that it's their whole life, because we have friends whose kids are doing two sports at once, and their whole schedule is planned out, and I want to make sure my kids get downtime at home. We live on 3 acres. They can go out and run around. So I don't think there's a problem with it unless you're not getting enough of that outdoor time that's unstructured along with it, because it can be really physically great to get some kids involved who are less motivated and get them involved in some sports activities or something that they really enjoy, but some parents really overdo that, and it can be overwhelming for the kids, and they don't get any downtime. Does that kind of answer what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I've seen that with many families. They're just running everywhere. The kids don't. And I've had,
yeah,
kids in therapy tell me, I don't have time to go do anything but sports. Or
I know.
Dad had me doing this, and they don't even want to do it themselves.
Yeah, and sports now are becoming year-round. I actually gave a presentation last year on youth sports and what's happening with that whole thing, because that's so crazy compared to what it was when I was a kid, too. So
it just seems like our society, too, has really contributed to this problem of unstructured time outside. I mean, when I was a kid, we just come home from school and go outside and play for hours. Mm-hmm. But it seems like there's that attitude of safety. Got to keep our kids safe.
I know.
You know, missing children, and it's everywhere. And it just seems like that's a concern of parents that has contributed to this problem. I'm not sure if that's accurate, but
it is. In the research, because I've read on that as well, and that's absolutely true. So parents today will say that when they were kids, they were out. I mean, I was outside riding my bike everywhere, no helmet, all that.
Right.
But then our kids today, we want to know where they are at all times, and if we do let them outdoors, it's usually limited, because, you know, we do now have to worry about where, you know, I want to know where my kids are. So, but if we can put them in a safe environment, that's where it would be ideal, outdoors in a safe environment. So, so your brain cells will grow when you exercise. You can create new brain cells with exercise. The best type of exercise for your brain is aerobic type exercise, so it would be something where you're getting the blood flowing, the heart going.
What's BDNF?
Yeah.
Brain-derived neurotrophic factor. I mentioned it a couple slides ago, but it basically, did I go back?
Yeah.
Oh, there it is. It basically, like, it's like Miracle-Gro on the brain, and during exercise, it's kind of like you get more and more of it in your brain. So it's pretty amazing. Okay, so what happens with exercise and stress and anxiety? Well, stress and anxiety are both give us that feeling of fear, and I'm sure we've all been there. I know I have a lot of stress. Fear will cause the body to go into that fight, flight, or freeze mode, and that activates our stress hormone, which is cortisol, in our system. So cortisol is something that we want to release physically. So if we don't, and we have, in today's society, a lot of our stressors, we don't need to fight or flight, right? A lot of our stressors are we're stuck in traffic, or we have relationship issues, or we have work stress with our boss or coworkers, or things going on like that. And so it's not a physical danger where we need to actually move. So cortisol stays up in our body, and we're not releasing it. And if cortisol stays elevated, it can cause fatigue, muscle weakness, depression, anxiety, loss of emotional control, high blood pressure, headaches, all these stress responses that we see a lot of today because a lot of our stresses we're not releasing. So if we can exercise when we're stressed, we can actually release that cortisol in our body and feel much better. We had a couple weeks ago at my college, I was sitting at my desk and an alert pops up on my screen, active shooter, run, hide, fight. And immediately I go into the fight or flight mode a little bit. My coworker whose office is next door, she pokes in and goes, "What do we do?" I said, "Well, we're supposed to run. You know, the new protocol is not to lock yourself in, but actually get out of the building and get far off campus." So I grab a purse and we start running down the hall. And as we're going, people are asking us, "What do we do? What do we do? You're supposed to run." So we're all running out of the building. I get off campus and drive far away and then start checking my messages on campus. And 20 minutes later, we get a message that says, human error caused the, you know, it was actually a week after the Hawaii thing, which was kind of funny. So for 20 minutes, our campus thought there was an active shooter. And so, of course, everybody, it was a very stressful event because there was nothing telling us that it was not real. So it felt real in that moment. My whole point to the story is that what felt really good, and I still remember this, is as I'm running out of the building, it felt good. It felt good to be moving through that stressful event. I think if I would have locked myself into my office, the stress would just kept, you know, and I'm not saying that would have been a bad thing, because if the shooter would have been nearby, I would have done that, but to actually release that cortisol felt really, really good. So apparently the active shooter button is very sensitive, and they were making a cover for it. And when they were putting the cover on, they didn't even realize they had bumped it. So they had to have counseling for students for the next whole week because, you know, it was very traumatic for them. So, okay, what about exercise and depression? There are so many studies on exercise and depression that exercising can actually help more than the medications, and then you don't have the side effects. For some people. So it boosts epinephrine, it boosts your dopamine, which makes you feel good, it boosts those feel-good endorphins. Of course, the hard thing is if you're depressed, actually get yourself up and get yourself, yeah. I know, get yourself exercising. But it helps to reestablish those connections in the brain that you've lost with that depression. So it can also improve self-esteem because you feel better because you're moving. There's so many reasons. To exercise when depressed with no side effects. And I threw in a slide here just specific to females, but exercise has been proven to alleviate hormones from PMS hormones to menopause hormones. It just helps to balance the hormones out. Women who are pregnant, it can help to ease that nausea. Babies born of moms who exercise when they're pregnant have higher IQs and better language skills. So good reason to exercise while pregnant. It reduces your risk of low mood or depression after pregnancy. Women who exercise during pregnancy usually have a quicker labor and delivery. And, of course, exercise protects against things like heart disease, breast cancer, and stroke. And then with the aging process, exercise helps to keep those dendrites connected, those neurons in the brain connected, and it can actually reverse the deterioration from aging. So if you exercise, you sleep better too, right? Because you wear yourself out during the day. You feel better about yourself because you look better. You can actually burn calories up to 14 hours after a workout. So you go exercise, maybe your spouse doesn't, okay? You come back and sit on the couch the rest of the day, you're burning more calories than them, so you can feel good about that. You can burn about 200 more calories. Exercise will not increase appetite if you are overweight. If you are at a average weight, you will be hungry for those calories, but you need them because you need to eat them to replace the calories burned. And exercise suppresses your appetite for unhealthy foods. So I don't know if you guys notice that after you exercise, something greasy does not smell good or look good. You want something healthy like an apple or fruit. Okay. So what does God have planned for your life? Does he want you to be able to chase after your grandkids or be ready for a mission trip or whatever it might be? You know, I don't know. But I feel like whatever he has planned for me, I want to be ready physically to be able to do it. So if we keep ourselves in good physical condition, we can be ready for his call. We don't want something like our health to stop us from being able to do what he wants us to do. And also, of course, it's not just the physical part of exercise, but the fact that we're boosting our mental and emotional health as well. So it is God who works in you to will and to act in order to fulfill his good purpose. That's Philippians. We know all things work together for good for those that love God, that are called according to his purpose. So we know that God wants good things in our lives. He wants us to be healthy and to feel good. There are so many Bible verses about God healing us and verses about where Jesus was healing. So, you know, he loves us not only mentally, but physically he wants us to be healthy and healed as well. So I don't know if you guys saw this in the news, but the most popular class at Yale ever was last quarter, and it was psychology and the good life. Did you guys see that? In the news? No, okay. So a quarter of the students enrolled in this class, so 1,200 students in one class. So it just makes you think, are they not happy that they're looking for something, some answers on how to be happy? So the studies show that things that make us happy are being well connected to community and friends, obviously having our survival needs met, minds are stimulated and engaged, and then the last, number four, is being outdoors. But not just being outdoors in an urban setting, but in a green or a natural type habitat.
But it could be in an urban green space.
Yes, right? It could be. Yes, absolutely, like a park or something like that. Yes. People are least happy when they are at work, when they are sick, and when they are alone. All right, our digital connection. Most of us check our phones 1,500 times per week or about 150 times per day. Yeah, I do know I got here on Wednesday, and that's kind of my go-to thing when I have some downtime. And I was like, wait, I can't go on my phone. I need to. But instead, I've been talking to Jen, who came with me, or I've been reading, and that's been really nice. And I feel like it's a little less stressful than just always be checking messages or emails or things like that. Our kids are spending 2 to 7 hours per day on screens, and this is outside of school time. I know they're on screens at school as well for some of their classes. Average teens are sending 3,000 texts each month. And in East Asia, where there's a high use of technology, their nearsightedness in teenagers is at 90%, which they believe is from all the screen time. That is crazy to me. Doesn't surprise you? Japan, who's very closely linked to technology, has very high suicide rates, and 1 in 4 American women takes an antidepressant. So, and they've done some studies and found that in urban areas, there's higher rates of mental disorders, mood disorders. So we know it's good for us to exercise, but the problem is that our brain likes efficiency. So we like to rest. So if you had a choice between walking to the store or driving, a lot of us would maybe pick driving. So humans have a mind-body conflict. We have a body built for performance, but a brain that's always looking for efficiency. The reason some people use their genetic gift for running and others don't is because the brain is a bargain shopper. Can you relate to that sometimes? Or you know people that can? But if you look back through history, 99% of our history, relaxing was a luxury. If you had time to rest and relax, you would take it because that would be pretty special. But now we have things that do everything for us, right? And we don't have to be active, and our bodies just are not doing what they're wanting and supposed to do. So I'm halfway through, and I have 5 minutes left. So yeah. I'm trying to figure out which ones are important for me to go through in the last 5 minutes here. We do know that death rates in our country, the number one and two, which are extremely high, heart disease and cancer, have to do with lifestyle. Cancer is a little trickier because some of that is extremely genetic. But heart disease is related to lifestyle, and then down stroke, they've now found the link. Alzheimer's is very much linked to nutritional habits, and then diabetes. So out of the top several, lifestyle is a factor in many of the reasons for death. An obesogenic society is a society that supports obesity, which is what we live in. We burn 150 calories less per day than we did 35 years ago. And that by itself, if you didn't take into consideration the nutrition that we're eating today, the poor nutrition, we would gain 15 pounds per year just by being less active. Most of our jobs are desk jobs. Who has a desk job in here? Okay. Machines are taking over manual labor. Who drives to work or to where you need to go? Okay. And then, of course, we have the smartphones, video games. And then one study showed that people are indoors and inactive 93% of their days. So we live in a society that supports obesity because of the culture that we've set up.
And processed convenience food.
Yeah, we'll get to that tomorrow. Oh. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The foods are a huge part of this as well. So it's to the point where it's difficult to be more active. I know for a lot of people who are in an office all day, that can be a real struggle. So these are the reasons most people will say that they are inactive. So just take a look at those and see if you relate to any of them.
People are tired after, my boyfriend always says he's too tired after work and he doesn't want to.
Uh-huh.
I say exercising actually makes you less tired.
Right, you'll have a boost of energy with exercise. Any thoughts on these?
The fear of injury and path injury.
Yeah.
I tore my ACL twice and 6 months, the same ACL.
Yep.
And at the age of 18, was told that if I wanted to walk when I was 30, I'd stop playing sports or running.
Okay.
And that was the only thing I knew how to be active in.
Okay.
Like, walking to me never occurred. Like, I just always played sports or would ran. Mm-hmm. You know, so, like, it was about 10 years of, I don't know how to exercise or what to do, you know. And then it was kind of like, okay, I'm almost 30. I'm not happy where my body's at. I want to be healthier at 40.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, for me, it was a huge mind game to go through. And that
yes.
was before, like, sports psychology even hit, you know, the field. And I think that's so important for any athlete when they get injured to have somebody talk to them about the mental game of it.
Mm-hmm.
And what he didn't mean that I had to stop.
Yeah.
He meant, you know. And so, like, that was really tough for me to figure out. And, you know, I was like, it took a long time to gain that weight, and now I'm slowly losing it. But it, you know, that was, like, for me, I'm always like, oh, my gosh, when you talk about sports and, like, that's such, and if you're a kid who played sports and were decent and showed anything, that's all you thought you had to do. So when that's taken away, you just, you know, it's like a brick wall is there for you. So
Yeah, you don't know a different way to be active. And I get this because I teach fitness classes. I get this all the time. I'll have students come in. I have a bad shoulder. I have a past injury with this, so I can't do anything. Okay, no. Let's talk about what you can do, because there's so many things you can do. Let's not talk about what you can't do. And with the knee and ankle, the bike is really great, and the water is really great, you know, water aerobics or swimming, and just, in you know, coming up with a whole list of things that you can do instead of things that you can't do really can make a difference. But it can be really discouraging if there's something you've been passionate about and that you did for a long time, and now you can't do that one thing that you really enjoyed as well. So, yeah, definitely that's a big one. That's definitely a big one.
You just don't like exercise?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I heard this quote that said, and this was people going into a gym. Watch people going into a gym, nobody's smiling. Everybody smiles when they're coming out. And I think it's even more true.
Right.
If you go outside, everybody coming back in is smiling. You know, it's exercise is a chore or...
Right. I think there's a quote like... I really regret that workout, said no one ever. So,
well, and I think people actually, you know, like forcing themselves to get up and go, I don't think people do it. I think we're lazy. I would rather sit, so.
Right, that whole efficiency thing where the brain is like, yeah.
The end result, not the first step.
Right. Yeah, most people, once they do it, they're very happy they did it. Yeah. Yep, that's a tough one. I know weather is tough, too. The rain can be an issue.
Or things like, you know, I don't like going to work. So there's some things in life that we just do because we need to.
Yes.
And so that's what I have to start thinking about in terms of exercise.
Right.
I need to.
And you'll feel so much better.
Yeah. Well, and think about it like, not I might exercise tomorrow. Because if you tell yourself that, it's not going to happen. It needs to be. Is in the plan. I am going to get up and exercise.
What time?
And have it into your schedule at a specific time. And it really helps, and I probably won't get to that slide, but it talks about community and how if you have a workout buddy and a support system. Where I used to live, I had two friends that would show up at my house at 6 a.m. and we would run the town loop, which was 2 miles every morning. And I had to get up because I had two people showing up at my house. But if they weren't coming, I probably would have hit snooze a few more times and not done it. So having accountability can really help, and having a sense of community with others as well. Let me just skip to the very end to give us a sense of closure. And then, this might take me a while unless I can... Have you guys studied your Jung personalities? Because there's a whole exercise personality, which is pretty neat for each of them. So if any of you want to see these, I can show you later. Okay, so recommendations. Move twice a day, even if it's not exercise, but just try and, if it's a short walk or 10 minutes of yoga, spend time with others, laugh, make sure you get enough sleep, go outside once a day at least. And then with the study in the Finnish people recommend for the whole country is 5 hours a month outside. So that would be a couple times a week for 30 minutes. Or if you get out of an urban setting, 2 to 3 days per month. So like coming to Holden, you know, once a month. Sometimes tracking devices can help. I know I use a Garmin and it can be kind of fun to see your steps, but getting that support.
If you don't have a buddy, take a furry one.
Yes, that's right. And then have an active environment at your house. So outside, whether it's you have a garden, you have a park nearby. At our house, we have badminton set up in the summer. We have a basketball hoop. We have random sports equipment, just so it's there, so that when we go outside, we have things we can do. And then inside, think about that, too, because when we go inside a house, there's couches and chairs, and do you have things to be active inside your house? So we have Nerf balls that our kids can throw around inside, exercise mats. Do you have space to move if you want to do some yoga or some sit-ups or something inside your house as well? And then, like I mentioned at the beginning, getting outside can really help to relieve that stress and being active. So we're here to renew and to restore. And so exercise and getting outdoors are two ways to really help with that. Finding awe experiences, you know, search one out. You want to go on a hike or you want to do something really special. And then share those things with the people that you care about. So we'll end with a couple Bible verses here. Let us strip off anything that slows us down or holds us back and run with patience the race that God has set before us. And I love that he uses, you know, running and running a race as his analogy there. Forget the former things, do not dwell on the past. Forgetting the past and looking forward to what lies ahead, I press on to reach the end of the race. So thank you for coming.
Thank you.